saving money on everything you need at Menards. Your roof is the first line of defense against the elements, and it enhances the appearance of your home's exterior. Owens Corning shingles offer ultimate protection and impressive curb appeal. Choose from 26 colors of Owens Corning Duration shingles and transform your home today. Shop our selection of roofing products on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer and find plenty of great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, back with another hour or so from the best in the world of non-league football. Flying solo today with Dave Anderson, off collecting his latest Gaffer Tapes interview. Catch that on Audio Boom and all good podcast aggregation sites very soon. Thankfully, I've got some great guests on the phone, all celebrating good seasons so far, but with big games ahead this weekend as the season begins to take shape. So, with plenty to discuss, let's get matters underway. And so to my first guest, it's a weekend of some big games at the top of the table across the divisions, and none more so than in the National South. Much has been made about pacesetters Willstone being on their way back to the top level of non-league football, where they made their name, but their visitors this week could claim stake to the same description, with everything beginning to slot into place, as I'm sure my next guest will tell us. Welcome back to the Non-League Football Show, manager at Bath City, Jerry Gill.
Afternoon, Tim. How are we doing?
I'm good, and I sense that you're doing well, because talking to people that I know, fans, people involved with the club, there does seem to be a sense of the club finally looking good, both on and off the field, and a great feeling of expectation, but also togetherness around the club at Bath City.
Yeah, 100%, Tim. Yeah, I've been in the job now, as you know, just over 2.5 years, and we've gone around our business quite quietly, but we've changed it quite dramatically in the same tone as well. So lots of work's gone on off the field, as you know. A lot around the bid for the redevelopment of the club, and we could be on for hours talking about that one, but we're hopeful that will go through sort of second week in February, so that's exciting. But on the field, more importantly from my angle, is that we've changed our philosophy. We're a good side to watch, hopefully. People come and enjoy watching it. I think that's proven. You know, our gates are up over 1,100 now, Tim, where we first came in as around 550, 600, so that's good. And of course, we're getting results with it, which is all important. Otherwise, we wouldn't have these conversations now. So, no, we finished fifth last year, as you know. Ironically, lost out to Wildstone in those playoffs. And I thought they probably did a job on us that evening. But this season, as I said, we've sort of gone about our business quite quietly, and we've ended up in second spot on merit. Okay, there's a few games in hand on a few teams they've got on us. But I think we've lost one game in 18 and unbeaten in 12. So, we're in really good form.
You are in good form, and I like the fact that you say you've gone about your job quietly, because I would have said that, but as a journalist, it almost comes across sort of condescending, because you haven't been pulling up trees, but you've been doing all the right things in all the right order, and it's almost like a snowball, and we see so often it's the clubs that come good as the season develops that they're the ones that really go on to make success.
It's not easy being a non-league manager, Tim. I've got to be honest, it takes a while to get your squad right. And I think the key time is, and I hear a lot of experienced managers talking about it. Paul Doswell talks about it a lot. Come January time, that's when you really find out about your team. And what we've done is we've come out the back of Christmas after some really good results and continued that. It's taken us a while to get the balance right of the team. As you know, I use the loan market quite a lot, and we have to, because we're not able to compete budget wise. It's not a sob story. We're just not able to with some of the big London clubs. But also, in turn, forget the money. I need to get the right players in to fit our philosophy. So, the likes of Noah Chilvers, we've got on loan from Colchester. Who would think that? You know, a player from Colchester on loan at Bath City certainly fits our profile of what we need for a central midfielder. We've got young Sam Pearson from Bristol City, Alex Hartridge from Exeter, Dan Barry from Cheltenham. All these players fit the profiles in their positions for the club, for what I need and what I want. Around that, of course, we've got people like Ryan Clark, Frankie Artis, Dan Ball, Ryan Brunt. Tom Smith's got 14 goals from central midfield areas. So it takes a while to get that blend right, but we feel like gradually throughout the season, as you just said, we've gone about our business. We've been picking up good results. We've got the best defensive record in the league again this season. We had that last season, so that's a good foundation. And we're scoring goals, so it's a great combination. We're certainly not getting carried away, because we know this league's tough and it can bite you as quick as you think you've got it cracked. So hard work continues, Tim.
Yeah, and you mentioned the defensive record there. I think it was Gerard Houllier that once said, you won't win anything unless you don't concede goals. And that's a big thing. And that also, to me, from afar, that says a lot about the philosophy of the teamwork as well. Because normally great defences are built on players that want to play for one another.
Mm. We've got that. That is it. We've got players. And what we've built an environment. When I first came in, I spoke about the Bath City way, and you'll hear it up and down the countries and academies, and way I've come out, you know, I've been coaching in academies and I've taken bits from it. But around that, the main thing is an environment where players can go and express themselves and have a confidence to go and do it. And off the back of that, I believe you get the best from your group, as in that you get your team spirit. It's player led as well. I'm the manager of the football club, and what I want to hear is a voice in the dressing room. It don't want to be dictatorship, for sure. I want to breed an environment where they can have a voice and they can talk to me about a system, a shape, or a player, or whatever training they can do it. And you're spot on there. The team spirit and the group is probably the best squad I've assembled in quality since I've come into the job. So if we get an injury or suspension, we've got players now that can go in and play in any given shape, and we change it quite a bit in our systems. They know the job.
And yeah, looking at yourself, you had a great career as a player. I remember you as a non-league player, but obviously you played, I think, pretty much every level, from the top tier with Birmingham City, you know, down to where it all began, you know, down at Backwell United. Even I've watched games at Backwell United and Trowbridge. Of course, you had 160 appearances plus for Bath. There aren't many who can claim, like yourself, to have played at pretty much almost every level of the game. You know, certainly through the pro game and then through the top tiers of non-league game as well. Do you think that experience from every level, you know, meeting different people that have got different things, you know, at the pro game, you know, they're just focusing on football, but you know, step seven and below, there's a lot of other worries that these players have got to come to a game of football or come to training with. And as a manager, has that really helped you?
It does, yeah. I mean, more and more nowadays, we get Tuesday, Thursday night. We're not full time, so the amount of time on the grass is limited. I coach them because I am a coach first and foremost, but being a man manager is top of my list as well, because it takes a special kind of play. As you rightly said there, Tim, I came through the non-league scene, and it's the best grind that I've ever had. I didn't want to go through an academy. I didn't get an opportunity to go from a YTS or an academy system. I learnt my trade, as you know, over at Trowbridge Town, Backwell United first, great times, over at Trowbridge as a 16-year-old in the Beza Homes League. And you take all those experiences, and you take those experiences also off the managers you've had in your time. Ken Knighton back in the day at Trowbridge. I had Graham Roberts, what a great guy he was down at Yeovil, took me from Bath City to Yeovil, learnt a lot off of him. And then, of course, Trevor Francis signing me for Birmingham. Someone like John Ward, still a mentor to me. I like to bounce some ideas off John Ward, I learned more probably from the age of 32 to 39 playing at Cheltenham under John Ward and Keith Downing. Loads and loads of experiences that sometimes I forget, actually, Tim. It's only times when we do things like this that I forget what a career I actually had. It's not me gloating. It's me looking back on it and going, do you know what? I probably have learned a hell of a lot of life skills from doing what I did in my career. And I'm really proud of the fact, actually. And it's nice to tell my story. And it's also nice to share it with players, because some of these, you know, people like Tom Smith, he's been in the pro game, he's come out of it again, he's had a couple of opportunities, he's 21 years of age, and he wants to go back in the league, but there's no rush. So my story is, you know, I didn't make my league debut at Birmingham until I was 27, but then had a 14-year playing career at a professional level. So it's nice to share those stories, share those experiences, and be there not just as a coach and a manager, but also a bit of a mentor to these players as well.
Yeah, it's nice to hear that you do share your stories, because, you know, so often I speak to managers and, we're all of a certain vintage now compared to some of our players. Yeah. And you've mentioned all those names that you've mentioned there mean something to me, but sometimes they might not mean anything to the 17, 18-year-olds that are coming through. But it's those other stories, isn't it, about, you know, how the game can be, yeah, you know, or people in the game can be fickle, and you might be the star one week, and then the next week you're looking for a new club, and it's those sort of things that I think help you build as a manager, and it's obvious from afar that that's helped the club grow as well.
Yeah, we're right the way through. It's not just about me, the staff. It's about the club staff as well. I'm in the office now as we speak, and you know, you've got a director who's a cleaner who's doing some hoovering through the stadium this morning. Andrew looks after our pitch, and he's a director of the football club. Paul Williams in here full time as a football chairman. I've got a club chairman in Nick Blofeld, who's away from us living in Warwick, but building around the redevelopment of the ground as well. So we're all buying into it, and people have recognised it. People turn up at Twerton Park, and it's certainly got a feel-good factor around the place on a match day. Match day experience has improved. We've got a lot of volunteers. Carol Banwell, our general manager, she brings in a lot of volunteers from the university. People just come in and want to be part of it, whether they're selling flags and scarves out and around the stadium on match day, or ball boys and ball girls. I'm doing some work in the foundation for the football club, promoting in the schools and in Twerton. Twerton's a deprived area. It's a council estate. It's not affluent area. It's not the affluent area of Bath. Bath's known as an affluent area. So we go out and we're active to try and get kids and parents and everyone down to the stadium, and we invite them in on special offers and things like that. So as you can tell, there's excitement in my voice because the club is in a good place. It's great that the club is in a good place on the field. That's my job, of course. And long may that continue. It's a tough time coming up for us. We got Willstone on Saturday, and that's a big challenge. We drew them 0-0 here. I know Dean inside out. He knows me inside out as two coaches, two managers. We cancel each other out. We're both tactically astute on the game, and it'd be intriguing to see if either one of us going to try something a little bit different maybe on Saturday down there. But we're really excited about it. We're looking forward to it. We've got training tonight. We'll implement our game plan and our ideas into Saturday and go there with a really good following.
Yeah, I have written down here in my notes, yeah, a bit of a chess match on Saturday. I mean, you say you got a hard game on Saturday, which will obviously mean a big thing in the league. But then you've also then got the FA Trophy visit at Concord Rangers at midweek, hopefully.
Yeah, absolutely. No, with third time lucky, hopefully. Tim, that's gone off twice, as you know. So very seldom, very rare it gets called off a waterlogged pitch here. First time round 2 weeks ago, we had that deluge like everyone did in the country, and it just wasn't able to go ahead, and Concord had travelled, unfortunately. But this time round, last week, it was frozen, the far side with the old stand where we get no sun, as you know. It was in there from days before, and we called it before the day before. So no, we know this one's going to go on Tuesday. We're thoroughly looking forward to that one as well. The Carrot of Leamington, Paul Holloran, a guy I know from the Midlands. He's a great manager up at Leamington. He's done a great job there. And a couple of players I know from my time actually doing a little bit of Solihull Moors, Joe Clark and Junior English, playing for them. So I'm aware of them, but I can't get ahead of myself, Tim. I really can't. I've got to focus on Saturday. I'm here now watching Wildstone back again for probably the fifth or sixth time from their game on the weekend at Havant, where they had a great result. And that's our focus, the players' focus. They'll be tuned in tonight. It'll be a fun session. They'll go out. We'll do some work tactically, but we'll make them enjoy it. And like I said, at the moment, the job for me as a manager is just giving them that, because they've got the winning mentality. They've got the enjoyment factor in themselves. You can see that togetherness. And I'm looking forward to watching them go head to head with the league leaders on Saturday.
Yeah, you say that that's the job as a manager. But it's now what, Thursday lunchtime. You're watching back videos. You're then preparing for training on Thursday evening. You've got a director of the club doing some hoovering around you. That's what being involved in non-league football is all about.
100%, yeah, I love it. I absolutely love it. Like I said, I came through it, Tim, and I wouldn't have it any other way, and I've met some wonderful people by doing it. And in fact, if you speak to my dad's been up and down the breadth of the country watching me in non-league and football league, and actually he preferred watching, and he still comes to every single game. He'll be there Saturday, be on the supporters coach. He's 77 now, and he enjoys the non-league because he gets there. He'll be at Twerton at 1 o'clock because he wants to go around, talk to the stewards, talk to the lady who makes his sausage and chips, and go and talk about real football. I think often what he said when he came to Birmingham was talking about who's got a flash car, what salary they're on, who they're going out with, blah blah blah. I think sometimes at the top end it gets lost, the reality of what football is really about. And we see it, don't we, talking about VAR constantly and big salaries and agents, and you hear it all the time. So but listen, I'm ambitious. I want to be successful as a coach, and hopefully it's here with Bath City. So I want to try and get, you know, Bath City full time. I want to try and get us full time, and whether that will happen, we don't know, but we'll try our utmost. But it's a special club, like I said. And at the moment we're trying to, we're trying to achieve. And if we can finish better than we did last year, fifth, that was our target. But we've put ourselves in a really good position at this stage of the season, for sure.
Yeah, so certainly on the field, you're in a great position. You touched upon the plans for the redevelopment of Twerton Park. Now, it's so often discussed that the club would have to move away from Twerton, and you know, would that rip the life from the club? You're now snowballing. If anybody hasn't seen the sort of video recreations of what Twerton Park could look like with this redevelopment, please go and have a look at the Bath City website. It looks a great way of embracing the history of the club and the local area, but moving up to that next level, because at the end of the day, even as a non-league football club, we have to run as businesses.
No, we do, and if you talk about the figures, we've got a bet on the football club of £1 million. And we made a loss of 100 grand, I think, last year. So, as you know, that's reality. That's non-league football as well. We've got a budget that we stick to stringently. I do weekly budget, so it's not certainly through that, but it comes at a cost running a football club and a non-league club. So the redevelopment is key, and make no bones about saying that. Really, it's pivotal in the future of the football club. Now we've got an asset. We've got the land, of course. But Greenacre, the redevelopment company, have come on board with us as a partnership, heavily involved in it. There'll be some student accommodation. That's what I see, in my honest opinion, is the maybe the sticking point around it with the council at the moment. But we're really confident that we can get it over the line. It will create, like you've said, it will be a modern, purpose-built stadium. This side, the main stand side, all the shops will be redeveloped in Twerton. So it's not just for the football club, it's for the area and the local community of Twerton. The driveway coming up in, new gym, new classrooms, new offices. But we'll keep the three sides. So when you walk out of that tunnel, you'll still see the terrace to far over to far and right hand side that we've seen packed against Torquay last year. You'll see the covered end where all our fans go in over that far side, and you'll see the Bath end, which is an open end. So it'll maintain that feel good factor and that proper non-league ground whilst you're in a safe environment for the community to come and use as well, Tim. So It has to get over the line. It will mean that we have to go outside of Bath to go and play shortly somewhere else, and we're in discussions with clubs over that. But first and foremost, we have to get it over the line. We were lucky enough last year to have a lot of national coverage. I don't know if you saw it. Henry Winter from the Times ran a story with us and myself, which was fantastic. Really grateful for Henry doing that. I went on to Hawksby and Jacobs and did a bit with them on their Talk Sport show. So we're getting some real good coverage on it, and hopefully that all bodes well for what may happen. Sort of, I think it's going to be the second week in February, we believe, now, the decision on it.
Well, we'll all keep abreast of that and update the listeners on that as well. But it's been a pleasure to talk to you, Jerry. I better let you go back and watch those videos, because I know Dean will be watching videos of yours.
He will. He'll be ahead of me on that one.
I wish you well at the weekend. I wish you well with the redevelopment, and we'll speak to you again soon.
Great to talk to you, Tim. Thanks very much.
So a big game at the top of the National South this weekend, with first playing host to second. And in the Northern Premier Northwest Division, it's roles reversed, with second place Ramsbottom hosting leaders Workington. A massive game for all concerned. And to tell us how preparations are going, let's welcome to the Non-League Football Show Secretary at Ramsbottom United, Tony Cunningham.
Good evening, good afternoon, Tim, whenever it is this is going out. Hello, nice to speak to you.
And nice to speak to you, Tony. It's whenever it goes out, it depends when people are listening. So we often get little tweets or messages to say people are listening on their way to football. So this weekend we'll see plenty of games, and because otherwise people listen to it when they're sat at home, because the games have been off. But let's talk about your game. We've just spoken to Jerry Gill, manager at Bath City, and they're second in the National South, but they're 7 points adrift from Wealdstone, who they're playing at the weekend, whereas you guys have it much tighter. A win will put you top Saturday. It's a big game for you.
Yeah, if we'd have won on Tuesday, we'd have been top already. But unfortunately, the curse of the 13th game struck on Tuesday. We went up to Dunstan, which is a long journey from Ramsbottom, and we actually lost our first league game in 13. But that run, Tim, has narrowed that gap. Workington were 6 or 7 points ahead of us not too long ago. We've had a really good run, and we've closed it down to that 1 point for tomorrow.
Well, I had hoped to get you on a few weeks back, but I'm always wary of being the curse when people are on those runs. So I felt better trying to get someone on this week because knowing that you were on the verge of a new run. Looking at the table, and I've been sort of paying attention to, and watching your progress up there. You've scored 60 goals. And conceded 35 in just 23 league games. Now, this is a team that people want to come to watch, surely, to get some goals.
Absolutely. At the moment, we're full of goals. I think the last five home matches, we've scored 25 goals. So we're averaging five goals a game at home, which is absolutely superb. Whether we'll manage that against Workington, I'm not too sure, but it would be very nice if we did so. But yeah, we're attacking very well. The defence did get tightened up through November, December, but we started leaking a few goals of late. So it could be a very nice going game against Workington.
Yeah, and so you're just breaking up a little bit there, but hopefully we can. And that's fine. Now. We say that you've been on this run, which has lifted you back up to the top of the table. Has promotion always been the aim from the start of the season?
Yes, it has. When Manchester Chris World Cup came in October last year, and he came in, we were sort of 14th in the league, something like that. He goes into the playoffs, he got us into the last 16 of the FA Trophy, the infamous visit to Weymouth when 17 Ramsbottom United supporters made a long journey. So we had a very good season last year. We finished in the playoffs. We got beaten by Radcliffe. But the aim this year was to go that one step further. Well, we've not done it in the FA Trophy this year, but let's be honest, at the end of the day, the most important thing is promotion in the league. So that's where the focus is. And if you'd have come to us in October, the end of October, really we'd had a fairly poor start. We're down in the middle of the table, not playing particularly well. But the managers had a good shuffle of the squad, trimmed it very well, got some decent players in. And since then, since I think the last defeat in the league was the 3rd of November, and we've gone all the way through virtually 3 months with that just one defeat on Tuesday. So we're playing some good football. It's attractive football. And it's going to be fascinating to see what happens on Saturday.
It certainly sounds like a game. If people haven't got something in their diary already, then it certainly sounds like a game to get down and go and watch. Now, you went up via the playoffs the last time you were promoted, I believe. And,
we did.
And they're great as an entertainment spectacle, but I guess you prefer automatic promotion this time.
I must admit that when we did get promoted last time, we went up to play Darlington at Bishop Auckland. There were nearly 2,000 on, and I think 100 from Rami, and we beat them. And 3 days later, we went over to Bamber Bridge, again, slightly underdogs, and we managed to beat them there. So it was a fascinating week to look back on, but if we'd have lost either of those games, it would have been quite depressing. So obviously, to win promotion outright is by far the best way of doing it. But if you can't do that, at least get in with that sort of almost the lottery of the playoffs. And they aren't half entertaining, aren't they?
They are entertaining, but I'd imagine a lot of extra work for you as a secretary.
Yeah, it is, but I don't mind. I mean, that's what we're in the game for. It's the enjoyment of the involvement of running a club. I mean, I love it. It is extra work, but it's just part and parcel of the job, Tim.
Well, now I often go on about the secretary's job, and it's one that I've never wanted. I will do almost anything at my football club, but and I've stepped in the past to cover holidays, but it's a stress. I mean, there's this rule, there's this bit of paper has to be done this way. Yeah. You have to fill in. Then you have to deal with the people in your own club as well. You have to deal with players. You have to deal with directors, with managers. And you all just keep the world of football going without any fuss. How did you end up in the job?
I started to assist the previous secretary. He'd been there quite a few years. I was doing all sorts at the club, like that. I'm the PA man down there, and I do a lot of the promotional work in the papers and all the rest of it. And when he decided to pack in, we got someone else in, but he didn't last long. So I suddenly found myself with all my books in front of me and saying, there you are, Tony, take it on. So I've done it for about 6 years now. But I do enjoy it, Tim, but you're quite right. We do this as a hobby. We don't get paid or anything for it. And there's me and all the other secretaries around the country. We do this for the love of the game and the love of the club. My golly, if we step out of line briefly, we get hammered. And I think it's a little bit unfair, but we know the rules when we're taking on. I can understand how the leagues want to make sure that everything's done properly. It's got to be done properly, otherwise the league doesn't carry on its duties as normal. The FA, I've had issues with the FA, as probably most secretaries have, and sometimes it's very frustrating. We just have to deal with it. We just have to get on with it.
You just have to get on with it. But, I mean, I take my hat off. I salute you all, because it is a job that I wouldn't want to do, because there are so many things that can go wrong, and you need a very dedicated mind to be able to do things. Particularly when you say, I know that how much other stuff you also do at the club and keep the club ticking along.
Yeah. It's like any non-league club, Tim, but the supporters turn up on a Saturday or a Tuesday night and enjoy the game and off they go. They don't realise the amount of work that goes on to get a club into that situation. Getting the ground ready, both on and off the pitch, the catering. There's so many jobs that need doing at non-league level. Sadly, one of the problems I think the game is facing is the fact that the younger element don't appear to be coming into it as they did 10, 20, 30 years ago. At Rami, like most clubs, most of the people that's involved are getting on a little bit. And we do need younger people coming in, not just at Ramsbottom, but throughout non-league football, to take on the roles for the future. And my worry is, if people don't come on board, are these clubs just going to fade away and vanish?
Yeah, I mean, it's a concern that I raise time and time again. I'm still one of the youngest people when I walk into a boardroom, and I'm no spring chicken. Certainly, by the way my knees were this morning. But we talk about Ramsbottom United. We think about people like yourself, and also obviously Harry Wheeler, who started the club back in the 60s. You now play at that Harry Wheeler Riverside Stadium, and he's still there as a chairman. These are the smaller stories we love in non-league, but it's becoming all too rare as well. Do you think there are going to be these labour of loves in the future? Also, I remember seeing an article with Harry probably a few years back now, when he mentioned when he set up the club, I think there were something like 10, 11 clubs in Rami at the time. And I think there's only yourselves left now. And it says so much about football.
We're the only club in Ramsbottom now, but on the other side, Tim, the junior section of the club is absolutely thriving. They have something like 40-odd junior teams going up from the age of six. And that is something that we never had in football a few years ago, did we? Mm. This is something that's been developed over the years. And the good thing here is it gets youngsters, A, off the computers and into doing some physical exercise. It gets them playing football at that age. It's got a natural progression. We've signed this year probably six or seven lads from the development squad, which is the old 18s to 21s. So there's a natural progression from 6 years old onwards, which is good for the game. So I think the game is thriving at the junior level. I just hope it's not wilting too much at the top level. And we do need to put some sort of proper path where people who are not playing football but are interested in running clubs actually can move from the junior section up into the senior section. Because I think junior-wise, most clubs are probably the same. They've got a lot of good people, young coaches, young secretaries, young managers at that level that are doing a great job for kids. We've got to make sure we can get that transferred to the senior levels at all clubs in this country at non-league level.
A man after my own heart there. I saw you were in the hunt for a new groundsman recently as well. Is that a position that's been filled?
It looks as though it has, because up till now, Harry, the chairman, who literally does everything down at that club, I think he lives at the club, he's been a groundsman as well. Well, he's no spring chicken either, Tim, you know, and you get to a point where how long do you want to keep divoting a pitch, you know, and he has one or two helpers. Oh, they're all retired people. You can't keep on doing it. There's so many other jobs to be done. And as a chairman, I've said to Harry many a time that, well, you're divoting the pitch, you're not doing other jobs that are required, you know, chasing up sponsors and all this sort of thing. So I think eventually we've got through, and from what I can gather, we've now got a groundsman on a part-time basis who will come down and relieve Harry and the others of a lot of the work that they've had to do over the years.
Well, that's good. And that's one thing I'm always trying to get across to the people that are involved in our youth club, youth side of football, is that there are so many jobs within a football club that you can apply yourself to, you know, even if it's just 1 or 2 hours a week, or even half an hour before a game, or even, as you say, at halftime, helping the groundsman put the divots back in.
Yeah. Yeah, there's loads of jobs, Tim, and I just like to think that people can step. Maybe people don't realise they're there to be done. Maybe they need to ask, can I give you a help? Can I do this, that and the other with you? We're more than willing to have people come on board and give it. If it's only, as you say, an hour, 2 hours a week, that adds up, doesn't it? If you've got half a dozen people prepared to put a couple of hours a week in, suddenly it makes a massive difference. And it takes the pressure off the people that are there. Which I think is important as well.
Which means that you can all focus on the actual football side of things, and that's going so well. Now, there are plenty of travels still in the new Step 4 Northern setup, but have you found the north-west-south-east split a bit easier for you guys?
Nope.
I like honesty.
He's added a lot of extra travel. And we don't know what's going to happen next year, Tim. I mean, if we get promoted, it's not going to be an issue. But if we stay at this level, there's going to be three divisions in the Northern Premier League next year at level at their second level, or level four in non-league. What worries me, and I'm trying to get this sorted out if I can, because to me, a Mercedes badge split would be ideal. In other words, a northwest, a northeast, and a central area going down to Birmingham and around there. I've got a horrible feeling we're going to finish up with a northern section, which will probably include Ramsbottom if we don't get promoted. And if that's the case, our travelling next year is going to be horrendous. So it depends what the FA and the Northern Premier League decide to do as far as boundaries are concerned, as to whether we'd be better off getting promoted because we'd be doing less travelling, which is crazy. But we shall just have to see what happens at the end of the season, how they decide to split the area.
Well, I was talking to a chairman the other day who was discussing about buying one of these tour buses, which bands use. So I think you've got about 20 beds in there, and it drives up and down the motorway, and they can all have a kip on the way there. Maybe that's the future for non-league. We can get a few of these sponsored while they're not being used by the bands.
Yeah, and the other trouble is, Tim, that roads are getting busier and busier and busier. I mean, we're going up to Dunstan on a Tuesday, which is hardly, you know, ideal because the original game was called off on a Saturday. Our lads were leaving at 3 o'clock and it was sort of half 12, 1 o'clock next day when we're getting back. And this puts a lot of pressure on the managers and the players, and players getting time off work to be able to do it. Getting back in the middle of the night and having to get up for work next day, it's hard work, and it's more difficult now than ever because of the motorway. You're getting motorways closed off at night for work being done on them. Roads in general. One time you could set off at 5 o'clock knowing that's rush hour. Rush hour's come forward to 4 o'clock now. So the travelling and the distance between the clubs, we can't argue about that. That's how it is. But it's very, very difficult from a travelling point of view as well now.
It's not easy being involved in a non-league club, but boy, is it rewarding, isn't it? Tony, it's been a pleasure to have you on the Non-League Football Show, and I'm sure we'll get you on again because we're going to be monitoring how things go on Saturday and how things go for the rest of the season. But it's been a pleasure, and I wish you well at the weekend.
Tim, thanks very much for phoning. Appreciate it.
So plenty of big games then this weekend, including the one for our next guest, a former fan favourite as a player at the club. He rejoined in the summer as assistant manager, and he's helped lead Truro City to challenge at the top of the Southern League Premier South Division. And despite currently being second, they are many people's favourites for promotion back to National South. Welcome to the Non-League Football Show. Assistant manager at Truro City, Stuart Yetton.
Good afternoon.
It's good to have you on, Stuart, because I say currently second. You lost top spot last week to Chesham United, just a single goal giving them the edge. Then they go and lose midweek at Yate Town, who were just outside the relegation spots. Does that show the small margins between success and disappointment in this division?
Absolutely. I've been in and around this division for years, and you can win 4 or 5 on the spin and then easily lose to a team near the bottom of the table. So it's a very competitive league, very difficult to get out of as well. So and Yate have actually picked up recently, so they're actually in very good form. So that wasn't a result that actually surprised me. So yeah, that's worked out perfect for us, especially coming off the back of that defeat tonight. So
Yeah,
so it's a good result for us in a week.
But particularly because you've got another big game this weekend with a trip to third place Swindon Supermarine.
Yeah, they're actually probably the form team in the league at the moment. I think across the last sort of 6 or 8 games, I think they've taken more points than any team. So we go into this weekend probably, especially being away as well, probably looking at our toughest game of the season. Every game, we go one game at a time, but we know how big a game this is, so certainly we won't be taking this one lightly.
Yeah, and is it easier to motivate the players for big games like that against promotion rivals?
Yeah, if I'm honest, I think the team can motivate themselves pretty easily. But going into a game, knowing how big it is, I think that naturally motivates you that little bit more. Certainly did for me. When you know it's a big game, you understand the importance of it. So hopefully we won't need to do anything to motivate them. And coming off the back of a defeat, we'll get a response that we're looking for. So normally if we've had a bad result, we've always seemed to have bounced back well. So hopefully training tonight is lively, and then we can take that into the game Saturday.
Yeah, and a trip to Swindon from Truro, it's still a jaunt, but I guess it's probably shorter than some of those you face. Now, I'm guessing many players probably live nearer Swindon than Truro. So do you all link up en route?
Yeah, so the majority of the team are based in Plymouth or Torquay and Exeter. So the coach comes up from Truro, and we all tend to meet in Exeter, not too far from Exeter's training ground. So that's been the meeting point for the Truro coach for many a year now. So it's still a few hours on Plymouth Bay. So it's still a few hours for us, but Swindon's close to one, believe it or not. It's one of the nicer trips.
Yeah, I'd imagine you get quite used to motorway driving or motorway viewing out of the window. Now, it was been a great start to the season, but both yourself and Paul Wootton knew this season, but it's gelled very quickly. Why do you think you've been able to gel the players so quickly?
When we took over in pre-season, about a week into the season, the club, we only had several players signed. So we've had to largely build from scratch. Luckily, with Watsy's with his contacts in the pro game, that's helped us secure some players on loan. He's got great contacts. Some young lads who have previously played kind of with or under him at Argo, we've managed to get some of them in. Also, I've got very good contact in and around this level of the game, being there for the last, God knows how long now, for the last decade or so. So between us, we've been able to kind of exhaust that kind of pool of player knowledge and just go out and get as many signings of good quality as we can. So it really is down to the players. We've given them the platform on which to perform, and they've kind of grabbed that and delivered on it. So I think for us, we were looking more around making sure we're in and around mid-table and pushing on from there. And quite quickly into the season, those expectations have risen based on how we've performed. So, that's got to be credit to not just me and Watsy getting the players in, but those players actually performing up to their ability.
Yeah, and how well did you two know each other before joining up together in management?
So I know Watsy really well. So when I was a young lad at Plymouth Fargo on the youth team, he was the captain for the first team, and we're both Plymouth boys. So Watsy was always quite firm on the younger lads, and we had some run-ins on the training ground. But being a Plymouth lad, we always had that kind of mutual respect. And so he's always, when he's gone off and played different clubs, if he's ever been in and around Plymouth and we've seen each other, we've always retained a good kind of friendly relationship, and we've always spoken when we've seen each other, and we would always see each other in pre-season friendlies over the years when I've played for Truro or Weymouth. So yeah, we get on really well, and where we've linked up in this in these roles, even more so, we do get on very well. We've got very similar characters in what we find funny. Although we're very different people, we've got the same kind of humour, and that kind of works well when you're completely different type of people. So our working relationship is really strong.
Yeah, and I guess you as a striker and Paul Moore are defensive minded as a player. Do you then, are you able to bounce ideas off each other a bit better because you can cover the whole gamut of skills that you're looking for?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, me being more attacking and Paul being more defensive. We've got a wide range of sort of knowledge and thoughts on different aspects on how those players should play and what they should do. So that helps. We can bounce off each other in that respect. And what's his knowledge of the pro game and his coaching ability is fantastic. So for me, he's great to learn off. But what's useful and good for me to know is he does respect and value my opinion. So I think that's important because he's obviously achieved a lot more in the game than I have. But he certainly doesn't. I certainly don't get the feeling of being inferior to him. So that works really well. You know, we respect each other's opinions and we do largely agree, but we do have disagreements and we both respect that. And it seems to work quite well. And ultimately, he's the manager. He has the authority and decisions lay with him, but we certainly respect each other's opinions. And more often than not, we've managed to get it right between us. So,
well, you underplay yourself a little bit there, don't you? I mean, in terms of non-league, I mean, I think you played steps 2-7 with Truro.
I think you won
the FA Vars in 2007. You scored 72 goals in one season. Yeah, just a few. Over 300 appearances.
Top goal scorer in the world.
I've seen the Twitter handle. Yeah, top goal scorer in the world. But you made over 300 appearances and scored over 200 goals for the club at Truro. So I guess that's why Paul was so keen to get you involved there. But as a club legend really at Truro, how would promotion this season rank alongside everything else that you've achieved there as at the club?
I think this would be the biggest achievement for me personally, in my career. If we can do that, I mean, I think from the expectations in pre-season, like I said, very few players, based on what had gone on in the previous year or two, with the uncertainty. I think a lot of local players in the area were not keen to play for Truro after what had happened with the relegation and just some previous things. So to be able to convince a lot of players to come back to the club, and if we could get promoted off the back of literally having to build a team from scratch, I think that would probably be for me my best achievement, certainly at Truro City, in being able to do that. But fully respect, this is a tough league, and we've still got just about half the games remaining, and that's a long, long way away. Mm. But that would certainly rank up there for me in one of the best achievements if we can do that.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned that the relegation at the end of last term, but the club is a real era of change, isn't it? With new owners just over a year ago in the form of a Cornish Pirates rugby club. But how does that work in terms of their knowledge of non-league football? Or are you allowed just to get on with it?
Yeah, very high level. The owners as such, I don't think I don't have much dealings with them myself, but they seem to let Paul get on with the job. And there are a couple of people on the staff at the club who have a rich knowledge, whether that be of international sports. So our chairman, for example, actually played cricket for England and won an Ashes series, which he does remind me of regularly. So our chairman Jack. So you get and he's. Got a history and a wealth of knowledge in coaching, so we can, and it's not necessarily football, but we can lean on him for certain things. There's other people at the club that have a bit of football knowledge, so but largely, you know, me and Watsy just left to our own device. They care, they support us, and I think that's the most important thing is having the backing from the board to be able to go away and do your job. So they've been very supportive and enabled us to get the players we wanted to get and do the things we wanted to do. So that works really well.
And the plan of the union is all for this stadium for Cornwall. How are things progressing with that? Do you know?
I'm not sure how far advanced that is. There seems to be updates, and I think there's still some hurdles they need to jump back through. So I'm not sure. It gets very technical, but I'm not sure if when the government changes, they got to go through the departments again and get the funding and all that sort of stuff. But I seem to see positive updates coming out of that. So I think the Cornish Pirates and Truro themselves are hopeful that in the next few years that stadium will be, well, at least have been started and hopefully built. And if that is the case, for sport in Cornwall overall, not just football, rugby, but that can be a stadium not just for sport, but for numerous different things. So I think that could be a, a huge cheat or two for the whole county, not just from a sporting aspect.
And I mentioned, obviously, you're a fan favourite at Truro and obviously a favourite on the management team as well. But in your playing days, there were other clubs as well, including Weymouth, and you're about to be inducted into their Hall of Fame next month.
which very humble and very proud of. So I had almost four seasons there where I was captain, and if I'm honest, for me as a player personally, that was where I probably learned most. I kind of went from being a bit of an immature young man into, it made me into a bit more of a man and grow up a little bit. So great memories at the club, and built great relationships. And then got nominated for the Hall of Fame, and then they have a vote. I was lucky to get enough votes. I mean, it sometimes pays to be funny. So all those away journeys of wearing the kit man's teeth because they had false teeth is probably the fans of they've taken me to their heart. So I always say to lads, it always pays to be good around the change room. So that's certainly paid off in this regard. And it also helps if you score a few goals and get the club a few victories and bring back the good times. So yeah, very, very honoured to be getting inducted into
a
Hall of Fame.
Yeah, well, it is a big honour because Weymouth with a great history. So I'm sure there's many a player all wishing that they were in there as well. So from all your antics as a player, does that now make you the good cop in the dressing room for the management team? Do you sort of like, don't worry, Gaffer, I'll have a word with him and sort of, yeah, I'll calm him down, sort of thing.
Yeah, it's a difficult one because as I'm stepping into more of the management side, I probably ought to be a little bit more serious, and I'm starting to slowly step away from being just a player. But where I am still a player as well, I do love the banter in the dressing room. So, and that's something I would never want to lose, whether I'm a manager as well. So, look, I'm very lucky in my work. My job is where I manage people in work, so I've got a little bit of experience in that. So I know I'd be very different. But football for me at the minute, it's always been a place where I'll go, I want to win, but I want to have a great time doing it. So it's definitely a little bit, I've got to calm down a little bit. I can't do all the stupid things that I used to do, but I still try and get that balance of having a laugh. But going back to the question in terms of, this is how me and Watsy rub off on each other very well, in the sense that if he's going in firm, I can be the opposite route and go the other, and vice versa. If he's going easy, I can be the more firm one. So I tend to just bounce off what's needed at the time. So it's just kind of reading the situation, kind of adapting to each one. So
yeah, and I'm sure if you do need to have a quiet word in the players ear, you've got plenty of experience to tell them where things can go wrong and what they need to learn from. A big game on Saturday, then you'll be looking to win, keep the pressure up, and especially I think you've still got a game in hand as well over Chesham United. So we mentioned at the start, how close the division is. Do you think it's going to go to the wire this season?
Yeah, I mean, currently, based on current form, I can't tell it's not going to go to, go right to the very last sort of very last game at the minute. It's difficult to go on big runs in this league and win consecutive games just because, there's not a massive gulf in class throughout the whole of it. So you could quite easily go and get beaten by the bottom of the league 1 week, beat top of the league the next. So it is difficult to put a run together and sustain it. And certainly at that top end of the table, there are six or seven teams in my view that on their day you would absolutely be fearing. Like I said, we respect every team, but I look at six or seven of the teams that are up in that in those positions, and every one of them you're like, very good, very good. So I can't see a team running away with it at the minute. And if I'm honest, we fully expect it to go right to the last day of the season. And every week at the minute, the team at the top seems to be changing. And there's teams with games in hand. So once that all levels out as well, even more so, you could have the top five covered by three or four points. So it just goes to show the competition.
Well, Stuart, I wish you well at the weekend and for the rest of the season. It's been great to get you on the show, and always good to have a non-league legend on. I'm sure we'll speak again soon. But best of luck.
Thank you very much.
So, as ever, let's round off the show and head on over to Non-League Paper Towers. And welcome back to the Non-League Show. It's Editor-at-Large at the Non-League Paper, Mr. Matt Badcock. Welcome back, Matt.
Thanks, Tim. How are you?
I'm good. Are you refreshed after your break? And I'm sure...
Oh, I don't know about that. I don't know. Refreshed isn't near the top of the list of words I'd use to describe how I'm feeling. But no, I had a little break last week. It was nice to be away. It's actually quite nice when you pick the paper up and you don't know what's been going on, and you sort of find out. It's quite good. So I've had a nice break off, but back at the coalface now.
Back at the coalface. It's not been a massively busy week. I guess the biggest story that certainly grabbed my attention was Russell Slade leaving Hereford. Now, we spoke to him earlier on the season when he'd been appointed there. It was a bit of a surprise appointment earlier on in the season, but perhaps not so much of a surprise that they parted ways. I think he managed just one win in the last 14, so not really the impact that everybody wanted.
Yeah, I think you say it was sort of one of those appointments you think, well, that seems a really good one with sort of his experience and you know, higher up the ladder, but it hasn't quite worked out. It hasn't sort of really, it hasn't really worked out for Hereford since they let Peter Beadle and his staff go. I think sort of coming up for sort of 15 months, maybe 18 months now. So it's been a bit of a difficult period for the fans there. They've not really sort of seen, having sort of got used to that team that were watching, a team that were winning games and titles. They won the three on the trot. It's been sort of kind of a bit of a tricky period, and they haven't really sort of looked like they were going to push for the playoffs at all so far, have they? So it's been a difficult time. Obviously, you don't like to see, as we say, always say, you don't like to see managers move on from their jobs, but it seems it just hasn't worked out, and it'll be very interesting where they do go next. Obviously, Josh Gowling's been appointed as caretaker. He's sort of still a player and coming out of his to the back end of his playing career, and whether that's a route they sort of go down. But we know Peter Beadle applied for the job last time, and maybe. Even if he just did it to the end of the season, I think that might sort of please the fans. But whether that happened or not, I'm not too sure.
Yeah, it is an interesting one because you say that they had so much success, didn't they, under Peter Beadle? And there's much expectation as well with that fan base. And it's interesting that Josh has been given the caretaker role at the moment, because it is almost as if they need someone that understands the club just to steady them at the moment, rather than finding someone from external. So it's almost as if it fits Peter Beadle, but again, there were obviously reasons that he left, and there's reasons that he didn't get the job last time, and you can see the expectation in the fans' eyes that they should keep moving up and keep making progression further up the pyramid. And it's just such a tough one. It's also a tough one for any manager that might be interested in the job, when you see that it's been a bit of a hot seat since Peter Beadle left.
Yeah, I think it's a club that people will want to manage, because you sort of know what it can be if you can get things right. And they sort of saying, well, why haven't things gone right since Peter left? And obviously, we will never sort of know that fully ourselves about, we haven't been there on the case every day and things like that. So it does sort of seem like they need this sort of period of stability possibly, and then they can maybe reset and look how they go next year, because it is a club that will have that ambition of I guess returning to the Football League. But we all know this National League North is not an easy division to get out of at the best of times, and it must be difficult for their fans to sort of see other clubs have come through, like Kings Lynn came up last year. They sort of battled within the Southern Premier, and now they're going really well, and they're sort of maybe looking at their team thinking, well, how are we gonna turn ourselves into that sort of team that are pushing for promotion. So it's a difficult period, and it's one they, I think it's always an obvious and probably a stupid thing to say, they need to get the next appointment right, but they do need to now, because they can't, I think the fans aren't going to keep accepting that they're sort of just bobbing along now.
And it is nice, though, that also this week that we see where clubs have got it right, that they're prepared to back their managers as well. I see Mark Stimpson's signed a new 2 year and a 2.5 year deal at Hornchurch, and Russ O'Neill and Marcus Bignot have been contracts until the end of season 21-22 as well. So it is nice that clubs at non-league are embracing managers a bit more long-term than, you know, some of the discussions that we have week in, week out of the managerial merry-go-round.
Yeah, I think it's good to see that clubs are doing that, and you always hope that they do stick by managers. Always feel that, you know, even when managers get new deals, things can, and then teams lose a few games, it seems like everyone's under pressure suddenly, and I think that sort of is filtered down from a mentality at the top of the game. And speak to managers over the years, and they all sort of say they're always 5 games from the sack. So it's a volatile occupation, management, but it's great to see, obviously, say Russ and Mark doing really well at Guiseley, and they've sort of pushed their way into the playoffs. And they sort of lost the other night, partly because we said we'd try and get a piece of them. I think sort of said on Tuesday, maybe let's try and speak to guys in, and then they lose to Stimo. Yeah, he's doing great at Hornchurch. Obviously got him promoted, didn't he? And he's had so much success down the years in non-league, and he sort of, you know, won the trophy, didn't he, with Grays and Stevenage, and had a real sort of success, and then gone down again the ladder a little bit, but still turned out good teams that win games of football, and he's always a pleasure to speak to, and you know, he's a wild old character, and he knows his way around, so it's good to see. He seems a good fit for Hornchurch. Remember when he took over speaking to him, he said it's just around the corner from him, so that always helps as well, because you know that local area and the players that are around.
Yeah, and I spoke to David Richardson last week about the various players that were moving up into the Football League from non-league, and another move this week, Peter Chioso going to Luton, which I think is pretty much his home club anyway, moving from Hartlepool.
Yeah, it's a great move, and, you know, another player going from not just into the Football League, but to a Championship club. You know, it shows how much clubs are really, really looking out and making sure that they pick up this talent, and all credit to Luton for giving him that opportunity. Yes, like you say, he was at Dunstable, wasn't he? And they're a club who, over the last few years, have been managed to produce some players in sort of a difficult situation. They've got in those young players, and they've done really well. So he went up to Hartlepool, has performed, and now he's got this opportunity. I believe that Pelly Ruddock, who was part of Luton's conference title winning team all those years ago, is still there at the Hatters now, is Peter's cousin, so he's got familiar faces around him, and hopeful of having a chat with him at some point today. Is our old mate from the NLP, Stuart Hammonds, who's now
pulling a few old favours
Sent him a message. Sent him a message. He's obviously in charge at Luton's media now, and dropped him a message, and he's sent me over Peter's number. So hopefully we'll be having a catch up with him for Sunday's paper.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I had the chat with David last week, and how it tends to be the same clubs coming in and picking from non-league, but they're all clubs that understand the value of a non-league player's grounding. You know, people like Luton, like Peterborough, like Portsmouth, where they've seen the success from the players that they've had before, or in Luton's case, they know the non-league game probably better than any of the other clubs up there in the Championship.
Yeah, I think clubs are sort of seeing that they get these players that have, you know, game experience and game time. I've been speaking to a Step 4 player just now before we spoke, who a couple of years ago turned down a professional contract because he thought he was at a pro club, and he turned it down because he decided he needed to get out and play games and didn't want to waste any time in his career. He's only 20 now, but, you know, he made a conscious decision to come into non-league to play football, to get men's game, to get that experience of what it's like when 3 points are on the line and you've got fans who've paid money to get in and are expectant of you performing, and not just this under 23 environment, which obviously has its purpose and serves its purpose for many players, but in many ways, you know, as I'm always told, it creates a sort of false environment for players, and you know, things you can do in an under 23 game you can't always do with 2 minutes to go of a non-league game when there's when you're 1-0 up or 1-0 down. You know, you have to learn your craft, and I think more and more players are realising that they're giving themselves a platform, whatever level it is. If you're a striker and you go out and score goals at any level, whether it's step 1, 2, 3, 4, even further down, there's going to be clubs who are going to come and look at you and give you that opportunity to impress them. So it's good to see, and we've seen players successfully go into Scotland as well. Nicky Kabamba went from Hartlepool to Kilmarnock, and he scored against Celtic this week. So that's not a bad little story for him as well.
Yeah, more and more people spreading the non-league word. Talking about spreading the non-league world, what can we expect to read in the non-league paper on Sunday?
Well, there's, as you say, lots going on. Hopefully Peter Chiesa will pick up his phone and we can have a chat with him. But we've got plenty going on. We've got a nice piece from David Balcombe. He's introducing us to the world of the Arthur Dunn Cup this week. So that'd be something to look out for, with his fantastic pictures and words, and something a little bit different, hopefully, for the readers. We've spoken to Weymouth, we've spoken to Bromsgrove Sporting, we've spoken to James Belshaw at Harrogate Town, so a real mix across the pyramid.
Plenty to read then, a reason to get up on a Sunday morning, which apparently is going to be chucking down with rain, I think, for the rest of the week. So just make sure you go out, grab your non-league paper first, and then sit at home in the warm. Matt, thanks for joining us again on the Non-League Football Show, and we'll speak to you again soon.
Thanks, Tim. Speak again soon. Take care.
That's it for this week. Thanks to all of our guests, and a big thank you to everybody for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us throughout the season and join in throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show. And Dave Anderson, he's at DaveAnderson78, Caroline Barker at Caroline Barker, and myself at Tim Fuel. Plus, of course, you can find us every week on Audio Boom, on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio via your smart speakers, and all good podcast aggregation sites. You can also find the Non-League Gaffer Tapes there as well. 3 episodes so far, and a new one pending. I'm waiting for Dave Anderson to send that so it hits my inbox. Thanks again for listening, and goodbye.
Jabber production. JIBBA JABBA